Blog Talk Radio.
Latitude zero, longitude zero, planned by the Creator. Sesanthropus was the first man found on the earth. That earth was the motherland, Africa. We know that without total understanding of what happened in the past, it would be difficult to relate to the future. We know that within the structure of the music, there should be a message, and the message should be truth. So now, we give you Africa, the center of the world. So vast. So great, the African embrace. When you give up your soul, the color of life, universal harmony. The earth supports our conscious effort for sustained humanity.
Uplifting together in our strength.
Human beings, human love. On a spiritual tip,
growing, an exchange from one
so vast,
to the other,
so great, the African embrace. Live beyond, love beyond your skin, to where you belong.
Hip-hop that we don't stop. You see, it started a long time ago, and it wasn't a show. We gave birth to a style like a precocious child, feeling the passion for life, erasing away all the strife. Telling our tales with verbal mail, putting honey on the blade, creating language to persuade. Share who we've always been. Always a blessing, never a sin. We are doo-wop and bebop and hip-hop and we don't stop. Since our mother gave birth to everyone on earth, should we echo her call? And always walk tall. Cause we're hip to the world, so we create black pearls that everyone can wear, that everyone can share. We can't live in despair, so we shine everywhere. On and on. On and on. On and on.
We welcome you to Africa on the Move. Welcome on the first day of May. We wish the workers a happy May Day throughout the world. You work so hard and get so little because of the exploitation of a systematic system that is defined as imperialism and capitalism. But we know that you are the one that make the world run. So we wish everyone, all the workers, a happy May Day. And we'd like to thank you for allowing us to come to your home this evening, where we can speak truth to the powerless and the powerful. Today's program will be part two, Africa and the Western Europe burden. That's right. Western Europe is a burden to Africa and African people. We will continue the discussion like always. You can participate by calling in at 323-790-841. So right now, you know how we do it. Let's get started with our party by introducing you to our political panelists and analysts for today's program. We first would like to welcome Brother Haki to Africa on the Move. Welcome, Brother Haki.
Brother Africa, thanks for having me. My name is Haki Kamafi Nshoki. Currently, I'm with African Awareness, and of course, Brother Africa, you know, my thing is all about institution building. But one of the things that is so paramount when we talk about institution building is adequately understanding the function of the society in which we live, but specifically the system. And in that context, when we talk about capitalism, capitalism has a lot of very dark secrets. And among these secrets is the whole roots of totalitarianism, and that's rooted in capitalism. Often we think about the kind of control, the kind of opposition, expression in society. It's because of the roots of totalitarianism as relates to the system of capitalism. And the understanding that it's important we understand that, because it gives us some understanding in terms of who we are in terms of history. So in saying that, Brother Africa, I just want you to check this out, because I think this is key in terms of enlightening people as to, you know, the roots of totalitarianism and its relationship to capitalism. Now, Henry Ford once stated, excuse me one second, Brother Africa. Henry Ford once stated, people of the nation, quote, people of the nation do not understand our banking and monetary system. For if they did, I believe there would be a revolution before tomorrow morning, end quote. This theme resonated with conservatives, and as the impetus serves as a guide of sorts, underscoring their actions. Lewis Powell, former Supreme Court judge, in 1971 advocated too much democracy exists in the U.S. Now, according to Chris Hedges, Powell endorsed a blueprint in which corporations use wealth to control the political process of the nation by repressing any individual or individuals or narratives that question the efficacy of, or the greatness of capitalism. Implicit in Powell's declaration was society's need to control the powerless, who represent an existential threat to capitalism. Means to control the unproductive masses will be implemented by policy across the board, attesting to the incompetence of the masses and the necessity of conveying just how ineffectual they are. Rick Scott, Republican congressman out of Florida, authorized a bill called the 7-Point Plan specifically to fund hardship on the poor while empowering the wealthy. The plan calls for $1 trillion in tax increases, presumably to targeting the poor, the elimination of Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. The child tax credit, consisting of transfer payments, lifted 4 million children from poverty, was discontinued, while transfer payment in the form of money printing for the wealthy continued despite economic declines and unprecedented levels of inflation. Free money given to the wealthy resulted in 1% of the population's wealth increasing $6.5 trillion last year. This wealth is directly the product of liquidity or money made available to the wealth through wealth by the U.S. government. Consequently, the same 1% of the population owns $23 trillion in assets and owns 54% of all stock shares, according to the Federal Reserve. Now, ironically, upon close inspection, the totalitarian aspect of capitalism becomes clear, that if Federal Reserve is providing money to wealth, inevitably, the poor are locked out of participating in the economy. For example, the New York Stock Exchange trades 1.4 billion stocks daily, of which 2,800 companies participate, bringing $93 trillion in potential sold and unsold stocks. With this level of potential wealth, the concerns of the government toward the needs of the poor appears inconsequential. The very system that marginalizes the poor benefits wealthy politicians, both Democrats and Republicans. So when totalitarianism seeks to maintain control over the populace using repression and terror, government officials accept this coercion as a norm, thus ensure the emergence of more totalitarianism. Refusal to acknowledge capitalism's totalitarian strain have great ramifications for the future. Lessons learned from previous economic crashes in 1929, the year 2000, and 2008 have not been heeded by government officials. Ironically, factors contributing to these economic crashes were protectionism, which is the blocking of trade via tariffs or currency manipulation, bank failures or panics, and money supply issues. Ironically, these variables resulting in economic decline are still prevalent today. According to Citigroup, money needed to provide liquidity for the U.S. economy held by the Federal Reserve declined by $460 billion just last week. Federal Reserve plan to reduce its debt by $2 trillion means money needed by corporations to borrow will not be available, which will only hasten the decline of the 600 zombie corporations unable to make interest payments on its loans, expediting unemployment and poverty. The Federal Reserve inability to provide loans to banks and financial firms will impact stock prices as well. Experts expect, as a result of the Federal Reserve's belt tightening, the price of stocks will increase at least 15% on the S&P 500 index, or 30% when the recession deepens. By overvaluating the value of stocks, investors who control $12 trillion in offshore accounts will be disinclined to purchase stocks, resulting in the halting of the global economy. If there's any doubt pertaining to the instability or potential for a global economic depression, listen to this. The World Bank, an instrument of capitalism, revised the global economic growth from 4.1% to just 3.1%, not taking into consideration 95% of the world's central banks have reduced lending to businesses. Of course, there is an arsenal of strategies employed by the Federal Reserve to pump money or liquidity into the market. Now, of course, this term market is a very nebulous term. It really doesn't mean anything, but it is for those individuals who are defenders of capitalism, makes them feel good to talk about markets, even though from an objective point of view, markets do not exist. Now, one such strategy in terms of getting money into the economy is the use of the federal funds rate, whereby the Federal Reserve establishes interest rates by which banks lend to one another. The problem prior to 2007 or the Great Recession, the federal funds rate was cut to zero. The extremely low interest was fashioned to provide more liquidity to banks for investment and lending, but given the decline of profitability among U.S. largest banks, fewer interest was simply not efficient or effective. A different strategy was needed. Qualitative easing was tapped to provide sufficient liquidity to the economic system, but instead stimulated more inflation that spread throughout the world. With inflation rate at high levels, the damage to the global economy resulted in greater economic disparity between rich and poor, higher food and fuel prices, housing out of reach for the masses as a result of declining wages. Qualitative easing in the U.S. fell out of vogue, and the return to the federal funds rate was again contemplated. Historically, the interest banks charge each other for loans fluctuated between 0.25% to 6% over the last 20 years, but by 2022, the federal funds rate was around 0.5%. The most obvious conclusion from this return to the federal funds as a solution to liquidity and the rate of 0.5 or 1.5 tenths of 1%, other than an indication capitalism has no method to address the economic imbalances it creates. It's that 0.5% interest is not much better than 0% at getting banks to loan to each other. In other words, the solution to address the liquidity crisis was really public relations for the public. Reality is, with most of the wealth concentrated in few hands, effective or productive is simply impossible. Now this low federal funds rate failed to bring about the desired effect of slowing economic decline by reducing money into the economy. This lack of liquidity in the system needed for investments and finance has been compounded by tax payments scrutinized by the IRS of those making less than $25,000 per year in hope of squeezing the poor for revenues by eliminating the child tax credit and itemized deductions like child care expenses. Needless to say, under capitalism, the wealthy are avoided scrutiny, which decreasing their tax burden, while they enjoy high tax breaks and exemptions that undermine the vitality of the economy both internationally and nationally. Now, against this backdrop, it's easy to understand the increase of military expenditures of $108 billion per year and the militarization of the police. Both measures suggest the adversaries of capitalism are those countries and individuals advocating for change. In the case of U.S. domestic concerns, political elites take the position that economic structure or predatory capitalism will last forever. However, this self-serving view is questionable given political elites support or encourages crackdown on progressive news information and to perpetuate lies about critical race theory to perpetuate racism. The bottom line is strategies devised by political elites recognize the necessity of formulating divisions among people and the very real functionality of totalitarianism to prolong control and cultivating its offshoot fascism. Now the history of Hitler and Mussolini are instructive. I encourage everyone to contrast the two histories with American history. Such is the circular nature of history, and I encourage people to understand that history very, very clearly, because we're right in the midst of a very destructive, a very dangerous history. Now close to that, Brother Africa.
Thank you, Brother Haki. We now will go to Brother Moses, and we would like to welcome him to Africa on the Moon. Welcome, Brother Moses.
Thank you, Brother Africa, and greetings to everyone within the sound of my voice, especially the illustrious panelists. My name is Robert Andrew Moses. I've been in the struggle for scientific socialism from the moment I was introduced to Marxism during a government class back in my high school years, 1968. I call Marxism the race to cure racism. I bear witness that there's one God, Jesus, who is the author and finisher of my faith, and that Mao Zedong is his messenger for government. Fathers, help your children. We don't reverse correct verdicts. I'm pro-choice, and I vote. I believe women hold up half the sky. That's why I'm for the Equal Rights Amendment, ERA, yes. And so the struggle continues with Africa on all levels, psychological, ideological, and it's certainly the class struggle. It's a class struggle going on. There's scientific experiments going on, and there's the struggle for reduction. And hopefully we will find our niche in this political economy and not become the capitalist pigs that so many seem to be aspiring for. Thank you and for having me on the show tonight. Thank you, Brother Africa.
Thank you, Brother Moses. And following Brother Moses, we can now bring in our sister Eleanor, and we would like to welcome her to Africa on the Move. Welcome, Sister Eleanor.
Good evening, Brother Africa, my fellow panelists, and to our listening audience. Happy International Workers Day today. Yeah. This has been a wonderful weekend. Yeah. Yesterday, there was a demonstration supporting the Palestinian people and urging the U.S. to stop supporting Israeli apartheid, ANSWER, and the Palestinian Youth Group and others. headed that demonstration and rally at the Capitol yesterday, April 30th at 2 p.m. I stand in solidarity with workers today. Today I had the privilege to see a demonstration of workers headed down to Lafayette Square to make their voices heard through a march and demonstration celebrating International Workers' Day. We see workers so confused and divided, but this demonstration today was a real breath of fresh air to see about 100 people marching, and it was really just fantastic. Thank you so much for allowing me to participate in today's show. I will close out with that right now and look forward to discussing what's going on in our world.
Thank you, Sister Eleanor. You're listening to Africa on the Move. This is Brother Africa coming to you live and direct. Today's theme is Part 2, Africa and the Western Europe Burden. Before we get to our theme today, we're going to take a rough scary station break, followed by giving you something to think about. And then when we come back, we'll open up with what's going on in your world and the community. And, of course, you can participate by dialing in at 323-679-0841. Hit 1, and we will acknowledge your last four numbers. So right now, we're going to have a station break, and then I want you to listen real carefully. We're going to play a clipping of interest, and we'll come back under the segment, What's Going On in Our World, What's Going On in Your World, and the Community. This is Africa on the Move.
Tutata yezita, jukini. na Cristina, Irigongo yende mele, na Africa nzima, mama 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 eh, oh, na leliye mama
Welcome to Candid Africa, truthful and unapologetic.
And I want to talk about the issue of access to vaccines. We have made a proposal which is supported by more than 100 countries. And what we have said is we want, and this comes back to what the youth were saying as well, they want to know whether they have a continent which will help to develop their skills, where they can thrive. But what do we want? We want to be able to make our own vaccines. And we will deal with the issue of reluctance for our Africans to take vaccines. But we want to make vaccines. We don't just want to fill and finish and package, which is what we are being offered, that we want you to build a capacity to fill, finish, and package, and we will send you the drug substance. And we say, no, we want you to relax the intellectual property rights for a while so that we can make the drug substance because we have the capability. And there are quite a number of countries on the continent that can. And right now, we've got countries like Egypt, Nigeria, Ghana, Senegal, Rwanda, South Africa, and Kenya. Easily, they have the capability, the manufacturing capability. And we are saying we want to be able, we want to go beyond just getting the substance from Europe or wherever, filling and distributing. We want to make the drug substance, because that is where the intellectual property resides. And that is where we want our young people who are epidemiologists, who are scientists, to see that there is a future for them. Then they will not go to Europe. They will not go to America. They will stay here because they will know that they can work effectively and display all the skills we have. Now, what does the world, the northern part of the world do? They say, no. We know what is good for you. We just want you to do fill and finish. And that's it. And we say, no, we no longer want that. You did that long ago when you colonized us. And when you raped and pillaged our countries, we're saying, no, now we have the capability and we want to make all these things ourselves. Now, quite often we find that there is a bit of paternalism that underpins the relationship between us. I give you a very good example. After Omicron was announced, I was due to travel to West Africa. And in traveling in the wake of Omicron, I received calls from the four presidents that I was going to travel to, President Macky Sall, Buhari, Ouattara, as well as Akufo-Annan. And they said, we've heard about this Omicron, are you still coming? We want you to come. What can we do to help? And I said, President, if you're still relaxed about our coming, we are coming. A plane load of us, together with journalists, we got on the way. Before I left, I also got some calls from Europe. And the calls were so paternalistic. They were saying, hello, President Ramaphosa. We've heard about this Omicron. I am sorry to tell you that we are banning travel to Europe from South Africa and Southern Africa. No discussion, no attempt to hear what our views are. And I'm saying that the relationship needs to be mutually respectful. We need to respect one another. The African presidents respected me as we respect one another. But from Europe, I just got a message of saying, we banned travel, thank you, goodbye, see you next time. That's not the way to conduct relationship.
Did you like or hate what you heard?
Did you like or hate what you heard? That's the question. No, I didn't. Because from this particular commentary, we still live with this legacy of the Western world still view Africa and African people as their children. We'd like to welcome you back to Africa on the Move. You were just listening to a clipping on why the West continue to find ways to refuse to allow Africa the means to develop their own medicines, their own vaccinations. So before we go into this discussion on what's going on in our world and the community, I'd like to just bring my panelists back, my panelists and analysts back. And we just like to rehash a few minutes on as a reminder in terms of some of the attitudes and perception that the West still has toward Africa. Brother Haki, how will we be able to change this mindset for any Western nations in terms of still disrespecting the Africa and African people?
How do you change their mindsets or President Ramaphosa's mindset? Well, you know, one of the things I think is important is action. You know, one of the things when you try to engage in discourse, if the person you're talking to is of the position that they're superior, or certainly if hubris dominates, you know, the conversation, then the implication to me seems pretty clear. If these people are simply saying to you, it's nothing that you can say to me that I'm bound to listen to. And so it seems to me, given that reality, you know, talk is not sufficient in terms of overcoming this paternalism that President Ramaphosa talked about. You see, the thing is that when you think about the terms of, you know, the creation of the vaccine, there are countries out there who will be more than willing to assist Africa in terms of developing, you know, their vaccine, in terms of, you know, increasing their vaccine capabilities. Cuba, North Korea, you know, you have these countries, even China. You got these countries who are more than willing to assist Africa. The question is whether or not to certain individuals, certain states, assisting them in terms of development. I think this kind of notion that, in fact, or this fear factor, where, in fact, that Western African states continue or persist in doing things of interest to the West out of fear that if they don't do what the West tell them to do, then there's a cost to be paid. But it seems to me, when you look in terms of the sociological and economic devastation impact the economy, the continent, it seems to me, Brother Africa, that the continent doesn't really have a choice in terms of, you know, striving for independence or autonomy. It seems to me one of the things that if, in fact, they chose collectively to move toward autonomy or self-determination, then that in and of itself will compel Western states to respect them. You know, that's, don't get me wrong. Of course, there's a price to pay once you stand up in terms of being independent. But African states have to prepare themselves for the inevitable. But I think there is a certain fallacy, you know, when you continue to participate in practices which are disadvantageous to the aspirations of the African continent while being beneficial to the West. It doesn't make much sense to me. And if your position is that, well, if we didn't do what the West tell us to do, then economically they could certainly affect us. Well, the bottom line is that economically they're already affecting you. That is the problem. So when you talk about the economic system in terms of the global economic system, you talk about the World Bank, the IMF, you talk about the international institutions, they're all tools of imperialism. They work to ensure the underdevelopment and marginalization of Africa. And so this question in terms of fear seems to me to be somewhat removed from the reality. So when you think about in terms of not having access or control over your ability to set your currency, the value of the currency, or to set the value of your commodities, whether it be raw or otherwise, to actually participate in terms of world affairs, in terms of bringing about this desire, you know, see a world free of hunger, a world free of illiteracy, a world free of racism. So in order to achieve these things, you cannot achieve these things by acquiescing or participating in Western designs. So it seems to me that Africa has a fundamental, if not a political, but certainly a moral responsibility to go on its own in terms of development and utilizing those countries throughout the world who have a vested interest in terms of dealing with Africa fairly. So this notion that you expect the West to treat you without paternalism, to me, doesn't make much sense, because the West will always treat you as maternalistically as long as the perception is that they dictate everything you do on the continent. So first and foremost, African leaders have to come together to reject that paradigm, to create a new paradigm on the continent which says that we're in this together, and that we'll work together in terms of creating those kind of things that we need in terms of the advancement of the continent, the advancement of our people, not only in Africa, but throughout the diaspora. So so Brother Africa, when Brother President Ramaphosa says they treat Africa paternalistically, I'm like, my position is, what's new? I mean, they've always done that. That's not going to change, not until Africa itself become unified and socialist and understand that fundamentally Africa is war. And understanding that context in terms of war, then you understand that you have to pick sides in terms of, you know, which way forward. If your position is to be autonomous, to be self-determined, then you can understand that you're going to alienate the West, but in understanding that, then be prepared to take on whatever the West does in terms of trying to undermine your economy. But Africa has the power because it has the resources. It has the tech, it has the brain power in terms of overcoming any difficulty the West can impose on it. The only problem is that the West does a very good job in terms of supplementing this colonial mindset among rulers in Africa to perpetuate, you know, Western rule on the continent. That fundamentally has to change. And so once that changes, you know, this question of paternalism will no longer be a question. Africa will be treated as an equal. But until then, the West will continue to treat Africa in a very paternalistic kind of way.
Thank you, Brother Haki. Sister Eleanor, talk to me. You have a historical behavior of a people who treat you and view you as their enemy. They don't want you, the independence, to be able to create your own medicine to protect your own population. So why would you trust anything that they come and bring to you and actually let them inject you with it? What's your response of just listening to this clip, and Sister Eleanor?
Well, the South African president was asking one thing, and he was asking that Moderna and Pfizer release their intellectual rights so that South Africa, countries like South Africa, Nigeria, Ghana, Senegal, Kenya, Egypt, Morocco, and others produce their own vaccine, and that they would address the issue of vaccine hesitancy. I think that what's going on, Moderna and Pfizer put money above the lives of people and are refusing. And we have asked, and we've been asking that Moderna and Pfizer released this proprietary information, since the U.S. taxpayers paid for the development of this particular vaccine. So, yes, of course, Brother Africa, the one thing that I am focusing on is, as the brother said, they treated them like their colonialist children. But the reality is they just want to produce the vaccine in their facilities. What Moderna and Pfizer have offered to do is to send these labs there and let them assemble the vaccine. But that's not what they are asking. They're asking to produce the vaccine in the labs that are there. They are set up and ready to produce the vaccine and inoculate their people. You know, we may not feel the pandemic here in the United States as much as people do in other countries, like right now, Nigeria. Senegal has been pretty good. They haven't had the deaths that Nigeria and Kenya, for example, had been facing. And this is an urgent problem, Brother Africa. And it is just greed. It is a lack of concern for human life that is causing both Moderna and Pfizer to not release their proprietary information. And we've seen so much happening in the last year or more. President Biden asked them to release this information. And at the same time, the embargo against Cuba and the sanctions that in February or March that President Biden imposed against Russia. Also, he imposed sanctions against Venezuela as well as Cuba and another South American nation. Why? We do not know. But, yes, I'm sure Cuba would be willing to work with the several nations that have the skilled workers and the laboratory facilities to produce pharmaceuticals. But with the blockade, it's not possible. And, of course, Africa has its ties with the West, and that's a bit of a problem. You see, just on April 25th, you see Emmanuel Macron won the election in France, but you can also see something really dangerous happening in France, in that Marion Le Pen got 42% of the votes. She wasn't intending to win her party. What they're doing is building a party of right-wing authoritarianist party. And this is a real danger right now, Brother Africa. You see that we elected that President Donald Trump in this country, a fascist. You see Bolsonaro in Brazil. You see what's happening in India. So right now we have to fight authoritarianism. And right now there is a concern that many nations around the world, Africa, right now, Africa, and the spokesman for the several African nations, the president of South Africa, has asked just that this information be released so that they can get to work in producing their vaccines and inoculating their people and empowering their people. So as he said, that the young people with skills won't flee to the West, but will see that there is economically viable opportunities at home. And I think that's very important. Look, we're just a few days from the month anniversary, Brother Africa, of the assassination of the young Congolese brother in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We still do not know the name of the officer. Because of social pressure, we saw that the body cam of that officer was released, and you see the officer kneeling on this young man who came here as a refugee in 2014 at 17 or 18 years old, the father of two girls being murdered, execution style. And this officer was put on paid leave. Something is really wrong. So to answer your question with the vaccine, I have to, you know, just try to stay focused on what he was asking, and that was that these two mega pharmaceuticals release their proprietary information now. And I support them 100%.
Thank you, my sister. Brother Moses, talk to me. What you make of the clipping you just heard?
Thank you. I think Walter Rodney's book, How Europe Underdeveloped Africa, is relevant here. It's this dynamic of where the colonies are used for raw materials and you know, the education is suppressed and not allowed to develop. And so, you know, this at least there's internal contradictions are developing where there is a demand, because power can seize nothing without a demand. And so at least over 100 of them were together on this issue. And I think that's a good sign that, you know, because if they're serious and they stay united, they will go to Cuba, they will go to China, they will go to other people and get the job done if they can stay united and focused. I don't really have a whole lot to say on it other than that. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Moses. You're listening to Africa on the Move. I'm Brother Africa. We're going to be in the seat and we're going to take the heat. Because as we define it, we're going to stand behind it. We're going to move into our first segment of this program, what's going on in your world and the community. And we invite you, the listening audience, to call in at 323-679-0841. Hit 1. If you have any views or comments that you would like to share with us during this segment on what's going on in your world and the community. So right now, let's go back to our political panelists and analysts. And we can start off with Brother Haki. Brother Haki, a lot been going on. What's going on in your world and the community?
Well, before I get to that, Brother Africa, let me just clarify something, because, you know, one of the things, you know, when we engage in this kind of discourse, it's key that if we have something to say, that we be very clear in terms of any criticisms that we may have. One thing, so listening to President Ramaphosa's response, there are three things essentially that he was talking about. He talked about self-sufficiency in terms of, you know, the vaccines. He also talked about materialism in terms of relationship with Africa. He also talked about African relationships. Any of those things were pertinent in terms of raising the discussion. So this notion that the fact that he only talked about one thing in particular in terms of Pfizer's reluctance to waive those rights around vaccines is disingenuous. So I just want to raise that out there. So I hope, you know, that we understand that the whole point of this is not to engage in, you know, subtle slights, but to deal with the actual question in its fullest content. So I just had to raise that out there, because I think that's very important, at least for me. All right, in terms of my community.
Let me stop you for a second. I agree with you. I think also in that point, one of the things that we're not addressed is this question of African brain drain and how they keep Africa from being able to develop its own technology. So the students can stay home, and like you said, they have confidence, and they won't see no need to go outside of their home, Africa. I think that was also a very key point.
That was another theme. That was another theme. So the notion that it was only one particular theme that he was raising is sort of disingenuous, and I just hope that when we engage in this kind of discourse, that we be aware, you know, that how we articulate stuff does have implications, and people are actually listening to this stuff. Don't assume you can say anything and people are not listening. So I just want to raise that out there, and I'll leave it at that, Brother Africa. In terms of what's going on in my community, the question in terms of legalized corruptions, you know, one of the things, Brother Africa, when we talk about how corrupt Congress is, it's not a new phenomenon. In fact, there have been numerous representatives or former representatives who've been talked about the corruption that's very much a part of the congressional system. But I'm always pleased, though, lately is not only being progressives who have been critical in terms of the kind of corruption that's part of the Congress, but conservatives as well. And I find that extraordinary for conservatives to come forward and say, listen, this institution is essentially bankrupt. And for them to come forward and say that, I think is I think is tremendous in terms of, you know, providing clarity for people on both the left and the right in terms of the necessity of understanding, you know, the level of corruption and why the needs of the people are now being addressed, simply because corruption is so pervasive, you know, in the Congress. So I think that's important in terms of as a catalyst for change. The more people understand the corruption in Congress, then the more people are apt to get up and work together to try to change this paradigm. Anyway, Brother Africa, I write this article and I thought it was interesting. I thought I'd share with you because I think it's extremely important. But anyway, Alabama Congressman Mo Brooks stated an entrenched system of corruption prevents Congress from passing legislation that benefits working and or poor people. He stated lawmakers who want to chair a major committee like Appropriations, Armed Services, Budget, Energy and Commerce, Financial Services, for example, have to purchase their seats at a minimum of $1 million. Brooks explained both the National Republican Congressional Committee and the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee charge a fee to head a committee for 2 years. Depending on the importance of the committee, presumably committees overseeing corporate oversight or the economy, the fee may well exceed $1 million. According to Brooks, congressional members who can't afford the bribe price must solicit donations from special interest groups that engage in quid pro quo when exchange for money policies of importance to special interests must be carried out. This kind of extortion referred to as dues is part of every congressperson's orientation to the U.S. Congress. Thomas Massie, a congressional member of the Republican out of Kentucky, was so appalled by the system of bribes that empowers lobbyists to run Congress by determining leadership, he has been very vocal on the corruption in Washington and the level which congressional members participate. Now, this concern is magnified when funds used by Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee are used to enforce party discipline by eliminating funds for congressional members who oppose Democratic orthodoxy, where corporate interest takes precedent over the people's interests. Progressive Democrats, like those attempting to uphold the interests of the people, are increasingly at odds with corporate Democrats who favor corporate interests, even when corporate interests exacerbate inequality and homelessness. Now, ironically, the unwillingness of congressional leaders to acknowledge this extortion speaks to a certain indifference toward their constituencies. In the case of Cedric Richmond, a black former congressman from Louisiana, who, by the way, represented the second poorest state in the union, he represented Louisiana from 2011 to 2021. He was confronted by the Sunset Movement, a left-wing climate advocacy group, about Congressman Richmond's inclination to accept foreign funds from representatives of oil and gas. As opposed to denying the allegations, he went under attack and invective against the squad who are supporters of the Sunrise Movement. Characterizing the squad, particularly Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Rashida Tlaib, as effing idiots, he did not deny taking bribe money. Instead, he engaged in obfuscation, attempting to paint the squad as outside mainstream politics. The fact he was appointed by Biden as a big supporter of the status quo as an advisor was certain to provide cover for policy that has a difficult time holding oil and gas accountable for ecological destruction and price gouging. So much for the notion all black politicians see fighting inequality as desirable. Cedric Richmond is the epitome of politicians, both black and white, you know, who favor the corporate state simply because they benefit individually. So we have to understand that. So when we make our votes, when we vote for these people, when we advocate on behalf of these people, then we should be very, very clear on the kind of people that we're advocating and we're voting for. We can no longer continue. We can no longer persist in sending people to Congress who don't have the masses of people's interests at heart. And clearly, just given the level of corruption, it becomes all the more important in terms of having people who are principled who will represent us, you know, in the Congress. And I close with that, Brother Africa.
Thank you, Brother Haki. We next will go to Sister Eleanor. What's going on in your world in the community?
Well, Brother Africa, it's been, it'll be a month on the 4th since the young man was murdered in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And what's so outrageous is that the officer's name has still not been released that this officer is on paid administrative leave, and the world has seen the body cam and seen this murder. So we continue to see inequity and the militarization of the police forces in many, many areas throughout the United States. In addition to that, as his name was, by the way, the young man's name is Patrick, I believe is Loyola, L-Y-O-Y-A. And he was shot in the back of the head, as we all know, by a Grand Rapids police officer during a traffic stop in response to the community demand for transparency and accountability. The officials released the really brutal body cam footage showing the police officer kneeling on Patrick's back and murdering him execution style. And while Patrick's family and his neighbors take to the streets in Grand Rapids, Michigan, we are hearing very little about it. But they are there. They are in the streets, and they're demanding justice for their loved one. And Grand Rapids officials have gone silent, as have most of the media. The city's police department is still withholding the name of Patrick's murderer. In fact, the Grand Rapids Police Department just put the officer on paid leave. That's what they decided to do. I think that's kind of outrageous. And this young man was a refugee, as I said earlier, came here in 2014 at 17 or 18 years old. And he's a brother, a son, a father of two young girls. And he really should be alive today. But a militarized, unaccountable police force murdered him, tearing another family apart and forcing yet another community to mourn this senseless and preventable death. So that's happening. And then on the 25th, as I said, that there were the elections in France, but what really, really concerns me about those elections is that that new right-wing party was able to capture so many votes, because many people put in empty or blank voting ballots, and it was just the older people who actually went out to vote. France had one of its lowest voter turnout in years. It was better than what we have here in the United States, but still not common for France. In addition to the demonstration yesterday, and definitely I don't want it to seem that my supporting the president of South Africa's concern for producing two vaccines at home and speaking up for several countries having the ability to do so, to be as if I was overlooking, and at no time was I intending to overlook the fact that France and Europe did say the Omicron variant is in South Africa, so you can't travel to Europe. We do not know why. And that continued maternal colonists have towards their colonies. And that's something that, as you said, and Brother Haki said, if the nations remain united, and with the 100 persons in the UN who voted to support, and the World Health Organization voting to support the release of this proprietary information, something will happen. Or as Brother Robert also said, perhaps other countries will intervene, such as China or Cuba. So it's been a lot going on. We see that the hearings, the public hearings for the June 6th insurgents are about to begin. And we're wondering what will happen with that. And Nancy Pelosi went to the Ukraine, and we're busy promising weapons to the Ukraine, and she's going to meet with Lockheed Martin. And I think we're really on very shaky ground. NATO is the whole concept of NATO is again outdated, in that there is no Soviet Union, and we're now attacking NATO is attacking Russia, and this is quite harmful. We know during the first week of the invasion, thousands of Russian soldiers died, and because of the anti-tank and anti-aircraft weaponry that was provided to the Ukraine. And I think that the world needs to sit down and use diplomacy to address the issue, the issues between the Ukraine and Russia, because clearly the U.S. and Russia had the strongest militaries on Earth, and Russia could have done extreme damage in the Ukraine, far more than what we've seen. And I'm not talking about the use of nuclear weapons or outlawed weaponry. I'm just talking about the state-of-the-art weaponry that they had, but they did not and have not. And we're really ignoring that as the world. And I think the U.S. is really making a big mistake in arming these NATO nations with our latest technology. It's only making money for the Lockheed Martins and the big military weaponry producers of the U.S., and it is not productive action for this country. Right now, we need to be focused on the issue of a lack of equity in housing, equity in education, in medical care. Right now, there's a study that was just begun by a sister out of Harvard in the District of Columbia in Ward 7 and 8, because even with the disenfranchisement of the African American community in the district, Ward 7 and 8 still have amongst the highest infant mortality rate in the nation. And African-American woman is 6 times more likely to die during her pregnancy than anyone else in the United States. And they're addressing, she's addressing that issue right now. And there's a study where they're asking women who have had children since 2018 or who are pregnant now to come forward. And right now, Brother Africa, there is no hospital available east of the river at all. So there's a lot going on. And we really need to stand up for women and girls globally, but also domestically. Thank you.
Thank you, Sister Eleanor. Brother Moses, what's going on in your world and the community?
Well, we see the imperialist war continues. We have a proxy by the U.S. Sending Nancy Pelosi and the Democratic delegation over there to Zelensky and promise him all the weapons he can muster, I guess. It's interesting that it's like World War One when the imperialist powers all were fighting each other and vying for to redivide the world in their spheres of influence, etc. There was no bourgeoisie that was correct. They were all imperialists, and the working class was being used as cannon fodder. And so, you know, we have to point out that the working class should not be defending the bourgeoisie, but turn their weapons on their own bourgeoisie and create the revolution. And that was the goal then, and that's still the goal today. We should not be supporting either one of these imperialist powers. And certainly, being in the U.S., we have an obligation to dismantle NATO and stop U.S. aggression. Meanwhile, Joe Biden was in Minnesota. No, yeah, I believe it was Minnesota. I believe to eulogize Walter Mondale memorial service. He died last April, I guess it was, but the memorial service was today. And that was interesting, listening to his stories about his life and the deaths in his families and how Mondale and his wife were encouraging him, and etc. I don't know, it put a human touch on him in some ways, even though he represents the imperialist class. You have to, if you take the enemy seriously, then you should know the enemy in detail. So meanwhile, the struggle continues for the Palestinian people and the liberation of Palestine. The demonstration yesterday, as Eleanor talked about. And anyway, I'll leave it right there. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Moses. You're listening to Africa on the Move. We are discussing what's going on in your world and the community. We're going to take a revolutionary break, and when we come back, we are going to continue the discussion again. We welcome all phone calls to share with us what's going on in your world and the community. We may not give you what you want, but we'll do the best to give you what you need. This is Africa on the Move.
Surely burn it all. 100 million. in chains, living in pain. Today is the same, and nothing ever changes. Hung by a noose, can't tell the truth, filled with abuse, and everywhere there's danger. How long can this go on? When will the light I see? I know I must be strong to last through my journey. Yes, to last through my journey. Time will arrive when we must decide to get off the ride and stop going through these changes. We must prepare and learn how to care, for soon we'll be there where our lives won't be in danger. And when the light is clear, oh how beautiful I will be to know that I've been here and made it through my journey, yeah, and made it through my journey, yeah, 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 made it through my journey, made it through my journey.
Hello, Reno. A bloodline across the waters, from Benin to Salvador Bahia. A scar across the face of the earth. Palarino, the place they brought the Africans, the place where they tried to make them slaves. Palarino! You can feel the whip, hear the cries, and see the blood in the red clay. The clay that holds the stones together is African. And each stone is a bone from a people called slaves. Palarino was the place where death came to dwell. His neighbors did not complain, for he was a way out. From the cold gray cobblestone streets to the lifeless cathedrals, tall walls of demons called angels, haunted visions of white faces crucifying Jesus again and again. But in the sacrifice of this blood, of this dance with death, comes life more rich, more pure, more alive, where death spent many lonely nights pacing the floors of his funeral parlor, waiting for someone to die. Palarino, a French word called the place of torture, became a place of strength, a place where faces of white saints became faces of black gods, where haunted visions and demons became healing visionaries and orishas from the motherland. And Jesus rejoined his kinfolk and was reborn and baptized in the sound of sensual skin turned up to dance, to inspire a fire like the sun pronouncing his presence. Palarino was the tongue of the flame, licking the eyes of those who have tried to remain blind, shining a light on a spirit that would not be denied. No, the chains did not break the spirit, did not enslave the music of my soul, did not shackle the will of my freedom, did not tarnish the glow of my gold. And all the Palarinos in Africa, in Europe, in North and South America cannot destroy the majesty of my people, the love of my people, shining like the sun everywhere we go. Everywhere we go. When the light is clear, oh how beautiful I will be to know that I've been here and made it through my journey. Yeah, and made it through my journey. Yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah.
We welcome you back to Africa on the Move on the first day of May, which is International Day in honoring the workers. Hell workers a happy May Day. We're going to move forward right now to our segment of our theme tonight, which is part two, Africa and the Western Europe Burden. That is a real interesting article. If you get a chance, please go ahead and Google this article up. Titles, Europe Looks to Africa to Fill Natural Gas Gap. Europe looks to Africa to fill natural gas gap. Again, one of the reasons why we titled this program today of Africa and the Western Europe Burden is, again, here again, because of the so-called impact of the battle that is taking place between Ukraine and Russia, here Africa go again, have to feel the short gaps and impact of how it is affecting other European nations and meeting their needs and interests. It's really interesting. When I read this article, one of the things I thought about is clear today that the greatest weapon or the greatest obstacle the African people is facing today on the continent throughout the world is the issue of neocolonialism. You have other people's planning for you, and you refuse to do your own planning as it relates to your present and your future. So when we look at this article, that's one of the central things for me that was brought to my attention in terms of, as Brother Du Bois stated in his paper, The African Roots of War. Here we go again. Africa playing a pivotal role toward whether or not if European countries will survive. You have so-called development taking place now that could have not been done 10, 20 years ago because Europe made a conscious decision to ensure that Africa will not develop in its capacity to produce its own natural resources. But now, due to this war, it is beginning to be looked at and viewed as a major resource base to replenish Europe its need for natural gas and oil. Brother Haki, when we talk about the Western Europe burden on Africa, this is a good example when you read this article. What did you take from this article, Brother Haki?
Well, Brother Africa, I think you summed it up pretty correctly. I think this is a continuation of neocolonialism, particularly as it manifests itself in terms of policy. One of the things, in looking to, Africa for natural gas, or so-called liquefied natural gas, it's very, very interesting that some of the leading places in Africa in terms of producing gas, particularly Nigeria, Algeria, Egypt, Angola, it's very, very interesting. When you look at each of these countries, each has their own unique challenges in terms of delivering, liquefied natural gas to Europe. According to the Azure Strategy organization out of London, in the case of Algeria, the liquefied natural gas reserves are at rock bottom. Now, what is interesting is that in order for them to send gas, liquefied natural gas to Europe, its capacity has to be increased. And so what happened was an organization called Sinotrack in Africa, which announced a $40 billion investment package. Now, that sounds good on the surface, but all, of course, when we talk about finances, it's often a double-edged sword. When you talk about increasing the capacity of liquefied natural gas in Europe, we enter these contracts. The thing you have to understand is that it takes time to build that capacity. But the problem is the contracts stipulate that the payments begin immediately. Once you receive the credit, you automatically hit with interest costs. And the problem is that since you've got a situation where it takes time to construct or to increase the capacity, but you're not selling anything, but yet you're accountable legally to pay off that interest that is accumulating daily on the contracts that you secured. So clearly, this has the implications in terms of making sure that, again, Africa finds itself, deep in the rabbit's hole in terms of, being unfairly penalized because interest rates are just so steep
that the ability in terms of Africa, you know, to absorb, you know, those interest charges is damn near impossible. And if you in addition to that, if you juxtapose the whole question around the vulnerability in terms of the Western economy, and you look at it, the level of inflation that exists in the, you know, Western world, we look at the decline of Western economies. So when you talk about entering into these contracts, then you're talking about countries that are desperate in terms of their economies. And so therefore, in order to recoup, any kind of resources at all, then clearly they're going to do that in terms of these contracts. So when Africa enters these contracts, it's going to be done at an exorbitant interest rates. And to me, Africa to be very, very careful, you know, in terms of entering into these contracts. That's a neo-colonial aspect in terms of these contracts. Now, what is interesting, though, you know, with respect to Egypt, now, Egypt, according to the reports, Egypt is not connected to a pipeline network. It sends its oil, you know, by boat, and it has a relationship with China. And most of the liquefied natural gas to China is by ship. But the report also, it always talks about the fact that Nigeria will construct a pipeline which goes also over 2,485 miles long, connecting to a network in Algiers. Now, supposedly, this pipeline is going to provide $30 billion of cubic metric tons of liquefied natural gas to Europe. That's when completed. Again, the question is that the interest accrue once you get those credits. And so, therefore, those African states, in particular Nigeria, are on the Algiers as well, is on the line in terms of paying those interest payments, which are going to be steep. Again, we're talking about the neocolonial aspect in terms of trade with the West. And this is the thing that Africa got to be very, 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 very concerned about. And lastly, Brother Africa, you know, one of the things we have to talk about specifically when we talk about Nigeria, one of the things that here, between 2021 and February of 2022, Nigeria, it was, according to its accounting office, over $3 billion in crude oil was not accounted for, which means that somebody siphoned off the system. Someone became independently wealthy at the expense of the economy, at the expense of the people in Nigeria. So, again, so when you have these kind of contracts with the West in terms of, you know, these credits, the problem is that because, you know, a lot of times these African leaders are very skilled in terms of converting credits into cash, they can simply rip off these credits intended for the pipeline, you know, to go into other people's private accounts. And this is one of the problems that we have. So I'm very much concerned by the potential in terms of corruption, again, revealing itself in Nigeria. And so these contracts, you know, doesn't go toward, building increasing its capacity, but more so going into the pockets of kleptocrats there in Nigeria, which historically always been the case. So clearly, Brother Africa, the fact that the U.S. counts on Africa, to save it, you know, it's to say that this kind of neocolonial relationship exists, where in fact that they can simply say, now listen, we know we've always exploited you in the past historically, but now here's your opportunity to do us a solid by actually, you know, making it possible for us to get your liquefied natural gas. And it seems to me on some level that's sort of contradictory. I mean, you can't on one hand talk about the fact that historically, as well as in contemporary times, you continue to exploit Africa's resources. And now that you need it, you say, listen, we're going to continue to exploit you, but we're not going to exploit you as greatly as we have in the past. So to me, it seems it's somewhat contradictory. So it seems to me that this is one of these kind of deals which Africa could be maybe better off, you know, just avoiding. But my guess is that given the kind of corruption among African leadership, the professional class, given the kind of corruption, they'll probably go for it. I mean, it's a quick buck. It's a quick way to make money very, very quickly. So my guess is they will go for this, but I think it's going to have negative implications for the African economy as a whole. And I'll close with that.
Thank you, Brother Haki. Sister Eleanor, when we read this article, maybe you could also connect it to, you wanted to respond based upon last week's program, some of the issues that Du Bois raised about Africa and its central role that it has always played. as it relates to various world wars and what's going on in the world. So I'll give you the mic now, and you can share your points of interest with our audience. Sister Eleanor.
Thank you, Brother Africa. W.D. Du Bois talked about the Berlin Conference, November 15th, 1884, and the fact that the Germans were there 11 days before the conference, carving up their land, their portion of Africa, and 7 million Africans were disenfranchised, while Germany took a land base half the size of the German Empire at that time. Mm-hmm. So what you see now is with this situation, you see that Germany suddenly had cut off the pipeline that the pipeline that it was constructing between Russia and itself, and suddenly it's either looking at the Nagal gas pipeline project that Brother Haki talked about, that roughly 2,500 mile pipeline that would travel along the Trans-Sahara gas pipeline, is basically what it's known as. It's also known as Nagal, N-I-G-A-L. But what we see happening is that Algeria, what Germany did was it suspended the Northern Stream 2 gas pipeline following Russia's invasion of the Ukraine. So now the two leading energy operators in our Spain's natural gas and Algiers, as Brother Haki said, the strong starch, strong track, which is a government, Algerian government-owned company, could increase the capacity of the pipeline, which goes directly to Spain. The one problem is, though, is that the Algerian pipeline somehow could fund, it could provide liquid gas for both Portugal and Spain that they could provide to the other European nations with the high capacity Mahab European gas pipeline. They call it the Meg. Yes. But that pipeline runs through Morocco. And last October, political tensions between Algeria and the Moroccan royal government caused them to stop working together. So the activity on the pipeline virtually came to a halt. What we saw was what was asked was that Germany, Germany's economic minister, Robert Habeck, was encouraged by the African Association of German Businesses to travel to African countries such as Algeria, Nigeria, Egypt, and others, including Angola, to try to help free Europe from its dependency on Russian gas. Now, the thing is, Egypt has a very favorable relationship with China. I don't think that they're going to change that relationship right now to assist the Europeans. They already have a contract with China. And the liquid gas is called, the acronym is LNG, and the exports in 2021 were largely from Algeria were largely destined for European markets, while the exports from Egypt were exclusively going to the Chinese markets. So what we see is a grab for Africa and its resources, while the world, while we must keep pressure on the world to find renewable forms of energy. But right now there's a pressure for resources that these countries need right now in the next 2 or 3 years. And that is the concern right now. Now, OPEC apparently weighed in on this issue, and they talked about why countries like Libya, though they are full of natural gas, could not, because of the destabilization in Libya, could not participate in line because they can't even figure out who to pay. And on the other side, like I said, on the other side of North Africa, Egypt has the largest year-on-year export growth in 2021, according to a report by the Organization of Arab Petroleum Export Countries, OPEC. And it was 1.4 billion tons of liquid natural gas that it exported in just the second quarter, compared to zero liquid natural gas exports in the same period last year. So, or the year before, rather. And at the same time, the liquid natural gas is also the only gas Egypt currently exports, as the country is not currently connected to a European pipeline network. So the issue is a lack of infrastructure right now, so that Africa really can't get these resources out. As Brother Haki said, China gets it primarily by ship. And Germany, more than 20 years ago, overlooked this opportunity to help develop the pipeline in the Mediterranean between Algeria and Spain. So, yes, this is a grab. Germany's relationship is quite different than the rest of Europe, since they were financing that Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline. And they already had one pipeline, but the Nord Stream is spelled Nordstream. And it apparently has just stopped that activity in the last month. So we see that according to a grower, the woman who worked for the think tank in Great Britain, China has offered long-term contracts on very good terms to Egypt. So again, there's nothing that's, and it has, and Egypt's not willing to give up the Chinese market share. And according to statistics, the statistic portal called Statistica.com, Libya's natural gas reserves in 2020 amounted to around 1.4 billion cubic metrics. However, the country is so politically divided that it does not even appear on the list of OPEC nations exporting to Germany or anywhere else. Even if Libya's gas was available, the structure is just not there. It's insufficient to boost exports. So right now it looks like it's on Algeria and the Nigeria and Algeria to bolster up the European energy crisis. But more than ever, the real goal should be finding renewable energy sources. That's what it's about more than ever. And that's where Nigeria probably can't be. It can be maybe a quick fix to the energy problem in Germany that Germany has now. But it really needs to diversify its energy sources, and now is the time to do it and to find renewable sources, and this can be achieved. We need to put pressure on the petroleum and gas companies, because after all, these capitalists are who operate these companies, except for, as we saw, Algeria. Theirs is actually a state-owned company.
You know, thank you, Sister Eleanor. You know, Brother Moses, the supreme responsible, Ahmed Sekou Toure, once stated that, and he told his people that, not until the people are organized and prepared to develop their own natural resources, it is best that the Guinean people was to allow their resources to stay in the ground. And it seemed like, reading from this article, Africa would be better off if they would just let their resources stay in the ground, because they are not benefiting from it. What did you take from this article, Brother Moses?
Yeah, I can agree. I can see your point. You know, obviously the capitalists, they want to buy cheap and sell dear. I mean, they're going to get it from as cheap a price as they can, and then they're going to sell it as high a price as they can. And you know, Africa just has to be organized and unified and demand the just share of their raw materials. But that means, you know, the subconscious forces have to be in power. And right now we got all these neo-colonialists and comprador class in power, and so, you know, that's not happening. You know, Russia is creating a dilemma for the European states, like Eleanor said, they should be turning to renewables. I mean, that's the future, is in renewables anyway, and so the sooner or later we have to get off these fossil fuels, and the sooner the better. And you know, so the devil's in the details, and And, you know, you have to negotiate these contracts if you're going to not lose out. And the deck stacked against Africa. They've been stacked against Africa. And so that's the situation they're faced with. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Moses. When we talk about negotiate, we always want to remember you must and should negotiate from a position of strength and not weakness. So let's continue as we talk about our theme today, Africa and the Western Europe burden. Brother Haki, as another example of why Western Europe is a burden to Africa, African people, can be seen and can be viewed from this article that we encourage our people to Google and take a look at and read it, titles Uganda to Pay Reparation to DR Congo, Top UN Court Rules. We're talking about the International Court of Justice ruled that basically $284 million of money need to be repaid to the DR Congo from Uganda based upon the past years of wars that have taken place between these two countries. Now, you know, Public Enemy used to say 911 is a joke in your town. The one talking about the International Court of Justice, I find real ironic in terms of, one, they use the concept of reparation, and two, who the hell are they to make any kind of decision on how Africa and African countries should determine their internal affairs? What you make of this decision, Brother Haki? I find it highly contradictory coming from this court when the setback allowed the U.S. and Western Europe to totally annihilate the rights of sovereign nations such as Libya.
Yeah, well, I on a certain level, I hear what you're saying about Africa, but on another level, there is a problem in terms of pragmatism, and that is namely that there has to be some organization, some institution to dispute these allegations or to at least challenge these allegations. One of the problems is that, you know, if you don't have some institution in Africa, you know, to serve as a court of sort, you know, to judge these kind of cases, the decision to finalize, you know, these cases, the decision to find some justice in terms of these cases has to reside somewhere. So in that context, the International Court of Justice, I think in this context, is justifiable. It's not to say that, you know, from a political point of view, that I agree that the International Court of Justice, you know, should be the reigning body when it comes to dispensing justice for African states. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying under the current construct in terms of, you know, the global community, when these disputes arise, there has to be some arbiter in terms of making some determination in terms of how these cases are going to be settled. So in that context, I think that if Africa had its own structures in terms of, you know, dealing with these kind of disputes, that'd be the best possibility of all worlds. But at this point in history, it's simply not a reality. So the International Court of Justice bridge that divide. But I think, Brother Africa, one thing I find interesting about the article is that the fact that, you know, that, you know, when the Democratic Republic of the Congo requested, you know, $11 billion, the International Court of Justice position was that, you know, based upon, you know, all the rape, all the conscription of child soldiers, all the plundering of gold and diamond, destruction of timber, all those things the rebels did only equate to $325 reparations. Then the court superimposed or stipulated that that Uganda can pay $65 million a year until $325 million is paid off. And I think it was more problematic, Brother Africa, the fact that they talk about this verdict was one of compensatory and not punitive. Now, I had a philosophical had a problem with that, because if it's compensatory, it's one thing. But when you think about terms of the kind of harm inflicted upon children, in terms, particularly as it comes to conscription, or, you know, involving children in terms of war, or the plundering of gold based upon, you know, world value in terms of gold, or the price of timber, $325 million come woefully short over something that happened, you know, 20 years ago. And so in that context, when you talk about, you know, the loss of earnings, you know, potential earnings to Uganda, it seems to me to see by far $325 million. So I had a problem with that. But more importantly, when the ruling says that it didn't include it being punitive, I had a real problem because the whole thing in terms of being punitive is important because, you know, punitive award says that, listen, we're going to punish you for your behavior to discourage others in the future from engaging in similar behaviors. That's how the International Court of Justice did. It says that you're free to other states to engage in similar behavior because we're only going to Uganda with compensatory damages or quote-unquote damages which actually occurred as opposed to penalizing them for the behavior that led to this kind of destructive behavior due by Uganda. So clearly I had a philosophically had a very difficult time with that. It seems to me that it's an indictment or an encouragement in terms of continuation of these kind of skirmishes or these kind of wars between African states, which is only interest of the West. Now, having said that, Brother Africa, I'm going to conclude with this, but I think it's one thing we have to acknowledge. And we talk about, you know, inside of the Democratic Republic of Congo, and we talk about Uganda in terms of this relationship with rebels inside of the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and we talk about those relationships, we got to be understanding very, very clearly that that Western intelligence are well aware of these relationships between, you know, the Ugandan forces and those sources inside the Democratic Republic of the Congo who wish to wage war against the Democratic Republic of Congo state. In that context, it serves Western interests in terms of facilitating this kind of destruction of African state. So by creating this instability, one of the things you make possible or make impossible is the possibility of African states actually working together in terms of trying to bring some type of redress to the kind of real economic problems that are confronting Africa. If you got two states that are at odds with one another, then one thing is sure, those states would never come together in terms of trying to create some mechanism or some political system to put it in place to which can mitigate against, you know, those kind of atrocities that are happening, you know, on a daily basis throughout the African continent. So we got to recognize there's a certain amount of Western duplicity in terms of what's going to happen with respect to those individuals operating inside the Democratic Republic of the Congo. We should not believe, you know, simplistically, that it simply comes down to a question in terms of Uganda against the Democratic Republic of Congo. These cases are much more complex. And so I think if we understand the strategic interests of Western states to facilitate such carnage, then we understand the nature of neocolonialism and why it's so key that Africa, the union of Africa, which negates against these kind of actions, which is so important in terms of the development of the continent of Africa. And I'll close with that, Brother Africa.
Thank you for your thoughts on that, Sister Eleanor, when you read this article. Again, it's clear that Africa is not poor, but it is poorly organized. And we can see how Western Europe used various tools, in this case the International Court of Justice, to create scenarios to make it become more of a burdensome on Africa. I have a take from this article, Sister Eleanor.
Thank you. Oh, Brother Africa, before I move forward with this article, I'd like to say that in our last article, we talked about the Organization of Arab Petroleum Exporters, and they really control the price of oil to create wealth. So I see this as maybe an opportunity for the African nations who have this liquid gas to form an African lead of exploiting natural gas exporters and work as many nations together to set a price that would create wealth for Africa, monetary wealth. See, the thing that Russia is demanding right now is that after the contracts have expired in April, I guess they expired yesterday, that all payment for their natural gas be paid in rubles. So there are people that really do try to organize and get what they want financially. So this article, to go back to Europe's looking to Africa's natural gas needs right now, I think right now is an opportunity for the African nations to form their own version of OPEC, but they're not exporting petroleum. They're exporting liquid natural gas, which is sorely needed by the Europeans for heat as well as so many other things, heat and electricity as well as so many other things. But in terms of the Democratic Republic of the Congo, I think the fact that the Democratic Republic of the Congo was looking for $11 billion and the International Court sets a much, much lower fee and it's not appealable. So I have some problems with that. And the judge, Joan E. Donahue of the International Court in The Hague, really, I don't think what is the history of the Democratic Republic of the Congo and Uganda and the reparations case. Congo first brought the case before the court, I think, in 1999. So in terms of asking for $11 million 22 years ago or 23 years ago, certainly this payment of 300 and whatever million dollars is really short-sighted. It is short-sighted, and it no way the $325 million in reparations, and the fact that they use the term reparations, in no way covers the cost for the social and medical and the needs that the people of the Democratic of the Republic of Democratic Republic of Congo have right now. You know, the child soldiers, the taking of the plundering of their gold, diamonds, timber, and other goods by Uganda or forces that they support. In no way is the DRC being compensated. I think this is a poor ruling, and it's almost as if the people of the Congo are being told to take the $325 million, take what you can get in terms of reparation, and the UN established what they felt was reasonable, but it's not. This International Court of Justice previously ordered Uganda to pay reparations earlier, and when the DRC brought the case forward, but This war between 1998 and 2003 had a devastating impact, and as well as the pilfering of resources that clearly exceed the value of $325 million. Mm-hmm. So reading out the court's verdict, I don't know where the compensation is. Not meant to be punitive, clearly. And the amount includes that $225 billion to be paid for the loss of life and other damages to persons. And that includes rape and conscription of children, soldiers, and I mean, it's no way will compensate or even provide the Congo with the monies necessary to provide the services that it needs to rehabilitate these children and these victims of these atrocities, let alone reimbursing the Congo for its loss of natural resources.
Yeah, I just find this whole discussion using the concept of reparation really interesting, because when it comes to be applied to Europe and the West, they don't know what that is. You know, they never heard of it. So I find it real contradictory for him. They don't even try to even go that route. Brother Moses, what do you take from this article?
Yeah, this I was able to look over this article, but I really didn't get to read this article.
No problem, brother. Let's just continue to move forward. But to our listening audience, if you get a chance, please check this article out. And it's a lot you can learn and take from this. But again, when you talk about the Western Europe burden, it's definitely a burden on Africa and African people. Let's move forward to our last article for the day, which I find real interesting. And this article deal with the brilliance of African people, our mind, our thoughts, our legacy of continuing to create and be mathematicians and geniuses in the science of math. It's a very interesting article titled "White Parents Upset After Former Teacher Lunches Black Math Genius Program." Let me read again. White parents upset after former teacher launches Black Math Genius Program. Brother High Key, what is this all about? When we talk about Western Europe burden to Africa, they not only do they want our material wealth, but they want our mental and intellectual wealth. We have a teacher who's a principal, a former principal. She decided to create a math program that will elevate the learning and the thinking of African children, and it will taught in a manner that more conducive to the overall well-being and development of African children. And here you have white parents complaining. What is the issue all about, Brother Hackey, from your perspective? Is this another burden on Africa, African people?
Well, you know, the bottom line about Africa, we have a system in place which is promulgated on all kind of falsehoods. This dubious notion, first and foremost, of this issue, this question around race, predominates in society. Because people subscribe to this notion of race, it makes it possible to create this dichotomy where some are superior other than that. And so in that context, what this program essentially does, it dispels that dichotomy in terms of not only race, but in terms of one being superior or others. So often when we talk about the contribution of African people, that when the book Historians in History by D.W. Nobles, and when you talk about terms of this orchestrated action, you know, by Western leadership to essentially write Africa out of history, then we see the impact in terms of that policy. When we look at it in terms of the kind of conditions that African people are subjected to on a daily basis, And these conditions are specifically created to undermine the emotional, intellectual development of African children. And so one of the things I often say, and I keep saying until, you know, until people listen to me, you have to create those institutions yourself. One of the problems in terms that negates against creating institutions to cultivate the best in our children is that a lot of the adults themselves have a slave mentality. So when you start talking about, you know, creating conditions or institutions to favorably impact on the intellectual abilities of our children, you lose a lot of adults because they don't believe in their heart of hearts, you know, that in fact that we're capable in terms of intellectually, you know, achieving greatness, particularly when it comes to things like, you know, science, technology, engineering, and math. So this apparently, see, the thing is that this teacher, Lamia Lebe Asata Moore, she understands the fundamental hypocrisy in society in terms of the institutions that foment this kind of brainwashing, this very subtle brainwashing that negatively impacts our children. And so what she's trying to do, she's trying to rebuff those influences by creating programs that specifically block the influences of the socialization, the very negative socialization, which says that based upon skin color, that these kind of things like, you know, mathematics are out of the capabilities, you know, of African people. And so what she does is so she used computer programming, physics, and calculus and exposed kids to that at a very, very young age. And now when one of the things about Africa, you know, when I talk about the importance in terms of African history, one of the things, you know, I didn't learn until later on in life, but, you know, I wish I had known when I was younger, but the influence of the Dogon people out of Mali was Africa. Often when we talk about Mali, we talk about the great university of Timbuktu, you know, some of the oldest universities in the world, or the first university, some of the first universities in the world. And so when we talk about Mali in terms of its intellectual prowess in terms of, you know, cultivating universities, mathematics, science, astrology, and those kind of things, we don't talk about the fact that there are a group of people in Mali called the Dogon people who were mathematical geniuses, who was astrologers and architects. They were among the first in terms of, as a discipline, architect in astrology. Even today, in terms of the mathematical concept, in terms of understanding the cosmos, understanding the universe, they were the first to do that. And the question becomes, when people ask, you know, how did they acquire these kind of skills, the Malian elders in the Malian community position was that, you know, a lot of this was taught by beings far away. Of course, it's very difficult in terms of quantifying, you know, in fact, you know, the notion in terms of beings actually on Earth in terms of imparting this information to the people in Mali. So it's very difficult to quantify that. But that is what the elders say in terms of this ability in terms of this ability in terms of math, or this understanding of astrology and architecture. But as a child, you know, I never knew anything about any of this stuff because no one taught me. And in fact, you know, when you talk about astrology, often you talk about people like, you know, particularly astrology and mathematics, you talk about people like Copernicus. But you don't talk about anything about but African people in terms of prowess, even when you go back to Kemet, Egypt, in terms of the universities in Kemet, in terms of, you know, math and science and those kind of things. Those kind of discussions will never take place because people in positions of power want to make sure that African children do not understand their histories. And to understand the history, you can control intellectually the kids' performances. And that's precisely what they want. So the outrage against Sister Sada Moore is the fact that she's undermining that negative, that socialization among, you know, directed at our children. And then they begin to understand, you know, that when you talk about things like math, science, architect, astrology, and all those kind of things, then you talk about African people being prominent in terms of the introduction to those kind of systems. Of course, these children don't know that. And so it's incumbent upon us as a community to make sure we protect our children, making sure that our children understand it. You cannot expect anyone else, you know, to create conditions to protect your children emotionally and intellectually. It's not going to happen. Henceforth, it explains why the resentment of a lot of these so-called liberal white parents in terms of her teaching, you know, black genius, this program around, black geniuses. Because what she does, she highlights the contributions both in the past and current, you know, of African people in terms of progress or African people's ability
or master abilities in terms of, you know, things like, you know, computer programming, physics, and calculus. And so this is why it's important she does that. But so as a community, one of the things we have to do is that we have to support the sister in terms of what she's doing. But let me just say one thing right here, Brother Africa, and I can conclude. One of the things to understand, a similar program existed back in the 70s in Harlem, in which kids, little kids between 5 and 12 were introduced to things like, you know, calculus, physics, you know, at a very, very early age. A very successful program. Of course, a lot of liberal white folks who say that they support the liberation of African people frowned upon such program. It is for me a somewhat of a paradox. In fact, if you committed to the end of exploitation, to the end of oppression, to the end of systematic repression, if you're truly committed to any of those things, then it seems to me that when you have these kind of programs which bring the best out of African children, those kind of things you think will be embraced because an enlightened African community is better suited in terms of assisting everyone in terms of bringing about this new paradigm that we seek in terms of paradigm of, you know, peace, justice, equality, those kind of things that we see as holistic. So it seems to me the fact that there are so many people who oppose, you know, these kind of moves speaks to the implicit internalization of racism, which is so much commonplace in American society. So I'm not surprised that the sister Asada Moore will catch hell, you know, for actually implementing such a program. And I close with that.
Thank you, Brother Aki. Sister Eleanor, your take on this article? I mean, I found it interesting because these are the same students that the rest of the world said can't learn. He or she take these same students and they become genius. What's up with that, Sister Eleanor?
Well, as she said, the program is based on an African-centered pedagogy that puts Black students at the center of learning by teaching students the truth, true origin of mathematics. And as Brother Haki said, and highlighting in particular the many contributions by Black people to STEM. And she mentions the fact that we make up 15% of the population, but yet nowhere in the STEM field are we represented by those numbers. So building the mathematical confidence of Black students by showing them what's possible furthers the program. The program takes a holistic and advanced approach to learning. Students learn to compute large numbers in their head quickly. They learn how to program. They're exposed to physics and calculus. Lastly, the program is application based, and it's important to understand integers in both banking as well as golfing, as she says, and to understand the modular arithmetic, and she talks about the importance in understanding cryptocurrency, etc. Now, this the program, the acronym is the BMG, does for Black students what she says practice does for athletes, and what Trump does for racists. It gives them the strength and motivation to go hard in this case in mathematics. Most importantly, teaching the true origin of mathematics. The BMG gives Black students the confidence and the audacity to realize that they can and should be great at mathematics, and it's not a traditional school program where slammed with a bunch of, you know, social studies and that sort of thing. And what's also, it's designed to pass, you know, just designed to pass an assessment. Mm-hmm. What it's really about is it's supposed to help schools bring out the mathematical genius in its students. And it's not about isolating white folks. It's about focusing on black children, because no one wants to lose their cash cow, as she says, certainly not a no college degree, having been stomped by fractions, perplexed, insecure. She calls them childlike adults, and she talks about racist people are ignorant of many things. However, they know the financial and social benefits of denying black people an opportunity at sovereignty and mental freedom and financial wealth. If you look at, she says, the four-year programs, or just look at, first of all, she says, look at the past 40 to 100 years, you will see there is a different correlation between low academic performance in math and science and the widening wealth gap and home ownership. This data shows that although black students, as I said, are close to 15% of the population in this country, they're not one STEM field where they are proportionally represented. So what she's really trying to do is change that paradigm by focusing on these people doing applied learning. You know, and as she said, whether it's golfing, whether it's cooking, calculus, science, physics, you know, every day we're dealing with physics, but most of us don't know it. Most of us don't know. If you're in a wheelchair and you have a hook on the wheelchair, if you put something with a lot of weight on that hook, then no matter how small the hook, it's not going to fall down because the weight, that's basic physics, but no one... People just don't, it's like we're without common sense, and she's changing that and putting in a new paradigm in place, and it's really fantastic. And it's something that I think the Black Math Genius Program is revolutionary. You know, it's something that black students need to be enrolled in. And in the course itself, you know, I've seen at a ESL school where there was a software program, Brother Africa, an audience where it was intended for developmentally delayed children, but they used it in the ESL setting. And what ended up happening is that most of the students could read or spell any word in English, whether they and knew some of the meanings by knowing their prefix and suffixes and what they mean, and it was really phenomenal. So she's doing something similar, but instead of dealing with English as a second language, she's dealing with math as a way of changing the economic reality of black youth.
Thank you, Sister Eleanor. Brother Moses, the mic is yours. What you take from this article?
Yeah, I think people pretty much said with the point, the high point, you know, that, you know, 15% of the population, et cetera. I think, you know, it's you know, that it's a shame that liberal whites or whites would be reacting to critical race theory or anything that's trying to advance the African children we've been oppressed and repressed, and and it's just there's no end to it. It's just no matter what, there's always some reaction, and that's a shame. But I'll leave it right there. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Moses. You're listening to Africa on the Move. We were discussing various articles and its relationship to our theme tonight, which is the first day of May, International Worker Day. Our theme tonight was part two, Africa and the Western Europe burden. If you get a chance, please check it out. White parents upset after former teacher launches Black Math Genius Program. Excellent article. So at this point in time, we have come to the end of our road. We're going to take a quick revolutionary break, and when we come back, we got to ask our panelists to give us their final thoughts for the night. This is Brother Africa, and this is Africa on the Move.
Métete en la cabeza, en intelecto y actitud, estamos sobrados, somos ricos y sigo respetando al rap de Puerto Rico, al cubano, al colombiano, mexicano y español, pero lo de nosotros sale del corazón, con sentimiento, con talento, violento, ojo, no con armas sino con conocimiento, el intelecto emana de los foros, te metes en internet y lo ves en los foros, es sabiduría, aunque muchos locos piensen que son habladurías, conozco primero a fondo la ciencia mía, pa' que después hablen como comadre chismosa. Yo te escribo en verso y en prosa. No soy Alice en el país de las maravillas. Estamos claros, te portas mal, te acribillas, te hacen papilla. Es que eso es obvio. O eres ángel o eres demonio, niño. O eres ángel o eres demonio. Quiero ver a toda la gente con las manos arriba. ¿Dónde están los latinos con las manos arriba? Que vive el hip hop con las manos arriba. ¿Qué? Con las manos arriba. Que viva la cultura con las manos arriba. El deporte con las manos arriba. Venezuela con las manos arriba. Recuerda el folclor, te lo digo el rap, crece la tensión. Ritmo caribeño, se siente el calor, esta es música de calle. Al que no le guste que vaya a llorar para el valle. Es música con estilo, tú estás claro, así que solo dilo. Pa' que lo sepa, suena tan criolla como comerse una arepa. Volar papagayo, llámalo, cometa. Tropo perinola, que te ruche las metras. Música venezolana y todo lo que se haga en Venezuela. No solo es un ritmo, escucha las letras. Tan criollo como que te vean y te digan epa, que te choquen las manos. Al final del día, dale, hablamos. Y lo que más me alegra, la gente latina siempre será gente negra. Felice Bolivia, Brasil y Cuba, Chile, Colombia, Costa Rica, Honduras, República Dominicana y Ecuador, Guatemala y El Salvador, México, Perú, Panamá y Uruguay, Argentina, Nicaragua, Puerto Rico, Paraguay, todos unidos nuestra América entera, junto a Venezuela una sola bandera. Junto a Venezuela, una sola bandera, comandante, te amo. Que Dios te bendiga.
¿Dónde está Amaranta? El Amaranta y el Pinky, ¿dónde están? ¿No? La cantera.
Godson Elijah and Lil Girl named Corinne.
To say the black of the best, the sweet of the juice, I say the dark of the flesh and the deep of the roots. I give a holler to my sister's own welfare. If I can, if don't nobody else care. And I know they like to beat you down a lot. And when you come around the block, brothers clown a lot. So please don't cry, dry your eyes, never let up. But don't forget, girl, keep your head up. And when he tells you you ain't nothing, don't believe him. And if you can't learn to love, you should leave him. Cause sister, you don't need. And I ain't trying to catch up, I just call him how I see. You know what makes me unhappy? When brothers make mates and leave a young mother to be a cat. And since we all came from a woman, got our name from a woman, and I came from a woman. I wonder why we take from our women, why we rape our women, do we hate our women? I think it's time to kill for our women, time to heal our women, be real to our women. And if we don't, we'll have a race of babies that will hate the ladies that make the babies. And since a man can't make one,
yeah. I remember Marvin Gaye used to sing to me. He had me feeling like black was the thing to be. And suddenly the ghetto didn't seem so tough. And though we had it rough, we always had enough. I hopped up off about my curfew and broke the rules. Run with the local crew and had a smoke or two. I realized mama really paid the price. She nearly gave her life to raise me right. And all I had to give her was my mic. Dream of how I rock the mic and make it to the light screen. I'm trying to make a dollar out of this thing. It's hard to be the shit. And still say you're rich. And in the end it seems I'm heading for the pen. I try to find my friends, but they're blowing in the wind. Last night my buddy lost his whole family. It's gonna take the man in me to conquer this insanity. It seems the rain will never let up.
To Africa on their move. Today is the first day of May. It's the National Workers' Day. They call it May Day. We received some excellent reports out of Cuba. People from all around the world gathered in Cuba to celebrate the appreciation of workers. Cuba is a worker state, one in many, as well as Venezuela and others. But anyway, we're going to be closing out this program today. From part two, Africa and the Western Europe burden. We ask our political panel and analysts give us their final thoughts for the day. Before they do that, I would like to make a quick announcement. I'd like to let my listener audience, our listener audience, our supporters, our listeners, to let you know that this month, for the whole month of May, starting today, May the 1st, has been declared African Liberation Month. By the All African People Revolutionary Party, GC. They have made a call to the world to make this month African Liberation Month. And as a proponent of what's in the best interest of Africa, African people, this station will be participating all this month in various programs. So this month, our schedule may vary. From time to time, we'll be doing additional programs. If you'd like to follow us and participate, please go and check out their website, which is www.a-aprp.gc.org. They have some excellent programs coming up for various days in this month. So to maintain and keep up with upcoming dates and activities, please check out the website, and also you get a sense to get in touch with some of the programs that we'll be hosting and sponsoring. On that note, at this point in time, we'll go ahead and close out this program by asking Brother Moses to give us some of his final thoughts for the night. Brother Moses, the mic is yours.
Thank you, Brother Africa. Europe is developed, and in terms of capitalism, and it seeks to subjugate Africa to its whims, and we have to recognize that, and unite the third world around a program of a political economy that can sustain and have independence from European control and the superpower control. And I just thank you again for allowing me to be on the show. Thank you, Brother.
We thank you, Brother Moses, always for your contribution. And we now will make our transition to Sister Eleanor. Sister Eleanor, your final thoughts for tonight.
Well, one is that this is a small window of opportunity for African nations to unite for their economic good because of the European crisis, to establish a liquid gas coalition and to set prices at its standards rather than what the European nations like Germany and the rest of the EU would do. More importantly, Brother Africa, the principal, Ms. Moore, said something very important that I think I'd like to close out with this evening. She talked about us having 11 times less wealth than the average white family, even without a college degree, the white family. And she talked about advanced racist oaths know that in turn the creation of low expectations creates more crime in the black community, less black-owned business, and as I said, 11 times less wealth than with white families, and overall a lower quality of life and death. And that means dying is even more drastic and devastating for black families compared to others in the nation. And she talked about the life expectancy being less for Africans in this country, the descendants of indigenous people. Now, we saw during the month of Ramadan, the Israelis killed some 25 Palestinians, including a almost totally blind mother of six. And this is all done on Friday and is in the occupied territory as well as in Jerusalem. And some 900, almost 1,000 people have been wounded. So with that in mind, the Black Math Genius Program is revolutionary. All black students need to be enrolled in a course of this type, and it creates the ability for our black children to be on a path of success by helping to identify their inner genius and purpose in life. Thus, you shouldn't be surprised by the fake outrage and of white folks screaming this is a critical race theory, because it's not. It's science. It's mathematics. Basic science. It will extend our life expectancy. We have the shortest life expectancy in the nation, only our red brothers and sisters suffer similar to us. So we really need to look at this article. I would urge everyone to read this article, and I would urge everyone to read the article concerning liquid natural gas and to realize how important it is that the nations right now work together as one hand and set standardized prices for themselves that will provide the wealth that they can gain from this situation created by Russia, the Ukraine, and the NATO nations. This is their opportunity to reap benefits for Africa right now. So with that in mind, happy International Workers' Day. I stand in solidarity with the people of Cuba, Venezuela, Nicaragua, and with the Afghani people. We forget about them right now. They don't have enough food, and they're selling children and organs just to be able to buy fuel and food. And Yemen, there's no mainstream reporting on Yemen and what the Saudis are doing in Yemen right now, and the more than 500,000 people that have died. Nor is there any statement ever made about the million people that died as a result of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. So as Brother Haki and the analysts say, we really have to study, we have to organize, and really need to take a look at what's happening globally. And it is really now a time more than ever to focus on renewable energy sources. So thank you for having me, Brother Africa. Thank you so much, fellow analysts and audience, listening audience, and have a very good night.
Thank you, Sister Eleanor. Brother Haki, before you give your final thoughts, will you share some information on the upcoming Feed Around Tour to Cuba and how people can get involved?
Sure, sure. The African American Association annual Black History Education and Cultural Travel Challenge to Cuba. And this trip will take place July 23rd to July 31st, 2022, leaving Cancun, Mexico. Now, for application information, we ask you to email us at African Awareness Association, all one word, number2@gmail.com. For additional information, you can contact us at area code 804-549-7492 or area code 202-714-9435. For more information in respect to the Cuban trip, you can go to www.aaa-cubatours.com. That's www.aaa-cubatours.com. And we encourage people to go to Cuba firsthand to see for themselves, you know, the model that we consider Cuba. One of the things I think why it's so important for people to attend Cuba, to go to Cuba, first have them see themselves, is that when we talk about the social political challenges facing African people in society, the reality is that Cubans also, at one point in their history, also had to contend with certain challenges. The mere fact that Cuba was able to overcome these challenges speaks volumes in terms of the possibility for Africans right here in America to similarly overcome such challenges. So we encourage people to go to see for themselves firsthand. I think one of the things that, you know, when we talk about the kind of malaise that's sweeping this economy, particularly the U.S. society, then we got to be very, very clear the implications for African people. One of the things as the society just deconstructs, there's a desperate need for scapegoats. And I think at this point in history, I think everybody's very, very clear when it comes to scapegoating who that's going to be in American society. If you haven't figured it out yet, let me just tell you who that's going to be. It's going to be African people. That's very, very clear. That's not to negate the fact that others also will be under similar attack, Jews, religious groups, in particular Muslims, gay people, and so forth and so on. They also will be under attack. But the primary target, as always, historically, in terms of the evolution of America, has always been African people. So we got to be very, very clear on this point. So Cuba provides us some context in terms of what we can do in terms of, you know, sustaining our communities, what we can do in terms of growth in our community despite this kind of oppression that's pervasive throughout American society. So we got our work cut out for us. We encourage people to go firsthand for themselves and see what Cuba is all about. Now, my final statement, Brother Africa, is that, you know, one of the things is that, you know, one of the things we try not to do on Africa on the Move, we try not to engage in hyperbole. We don't want to say things that are shocking simply because it elicits a certain response. We really want people to really think about what's going on in the society. And so when we give you information pertaining to what's going on, we certainly hope that people will take it upon themselves, if not openly, at least privately, you know, to do the research in terms of following up on the stuff that we're talking about and begin to raise the questions for yourselves. What does it mean to your life? What does it mean to the community? What about your family? These things are important. The conditions that currently exist doesn't lend themselves to, you know, peace, harmony, or justice. On the contrary, you know, we got a situation where people in positions of power are doing everything they can to maximize stress, friction, hostility, anger. They're doing all in their power to exacerbate those situations. And so, given that, then we got to understand that the kind of opposition that is created in society that pits, you know, one group against another group, is a strategy that's not new, but relatively old, but nonetheless is still effective in the 21st century. So we got to understand this wholeheartedly in terms of, you know, when we as communities start talking about strategy in terms of which way forward, then we have to incorporate the reality is that, you know, as much as we don't want to confront this, the bottom line is that in terms of bringing about real change in society, in terms of, you know, our perseverance in the society, it is going to take, you know, African people working in conjunction, working together to make sure, you know, to create not only the conditions, but to create those institutions which mitigates or to make it very difficult for those instruments of state power, those fascist institutions or fascist individuals to create conditions which are harmful to us. We have to create those conditions, and we first and foremost, we do that by creating those institutions and first and foremost, make our people aware in terms of what's going on in society and what it means to us as a people. Also, to create those institutions which really fortifies, which really empowers our children in terms of being the best they can be. That is so key. And one of the things that we all understand, that given the history of America, a lot of us didn't have the luxury of going to school. A lot of us had to drop out to take care of our families. And that's certainly admirable, and it's understandable. But having said that, it's also understand that given the nature of the reality, we have to want what's best for the children. If we really want what's best for the children, seriously, we have to think about those institutions, build those institutions that will protect our children emotionally and intellectually. At a very minimum, we have to do that. Having said that, Brother Africa, as always, I encourage people to unravel the matrix because that is key to our longevity in society. And as always, you know, enjoy the program, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, Brother Haki. We'll see you next week. We'd like to thank everyone, our political panelists and analysts, for giving their perspectives on the theme tonight, Part 2, Africa and the Western Europe Burden. We would like to remind you, the listening audience and supporters, that Africa on the Move can be listened to on every Sunday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, U.S. Please spread the word, share with your friends. Help us be a network of building this program so it can reflect and have impact on our communities and people. We often say that without information, you cannot think. And without organization, you cannot think clearly. We try to deliver you these particular aspects of tools to build within your community that will make your community stronger. But more importantly, it will put your community down the road of liberation where Africa will be free, unified, as well as socialist. That equaled the concept of Pan-Africanism. Once we achieve the objective, the aspirations and the needs and the interests of our people will be able to be met. So on that note, again, we thank you for listening to us and allowing us to come to your home this evening. We ask you to always remember, subscribe to Go Forward Album, Backwards Never. This is Brother Africa. We are always on the move. This is Africa on the move. We'll see you next week. And don't forget, please check out the APRPGC website to keep up with upcoming dates and activities as we evolve ourselves with the various activities in the planning mode for African Liberation Month. Under the banner of the AAPIPGC. So we thank you again. We'll see you next week.
make your word come to pass. Marcus, your word come to pass. You can't get no food to eat. Can't get no money to spend. And you, hello. Come to one come. Shall be